Mr. Patterson, Real 11. You were talking about, when we were interrupted, the different nationalities in,
yeah,
in the camp.
On the site, there was every nationality you could mention, and both civilians and army. We even had Straflager sailors, German sailors, coming and working on the same site as us. And with getting the Red Cross parcels a bit more regular, because the Germans would make sure that the people that were working for them would get better rations, and if there were any Red Cross parcels, we'd get them in preference to the ordinary holding camps. And with them, you'd got things in there that you could exchange for the people. There was Polish civilians and everybody as they could rope in to work for these on these sites, and they'd get them. So we used to do some exchanging. And
what sort of thing? What would you barter?
We'll barter for tomatoes, possibly sometimes a bit of bread, and eggs and flour so you could make your own, and all such things as that.
And what would you give for them out of your Red Cross parcels?
Soap was one of the things. You got a bar of soap in one of these parcels, and that was one of the things. But what they wanted as much as anything was a coffee. Everybody in Europe at that time wanted decent coffee, and they were only getting the German ersatz stuff made out of acorns. And it all depended. Whatever you got, you managed to find somebody that wanted something that you'd got, and you'd got something that they wanted. And
Did you smoke?
Yes, we had cigarettes issued with the Red Cross parcels, and they used to like to get hold of English cigarettes if they could. But practically anything you could think of, if you had a parcel come through from England, which, by the way, I didn't, mine always went astray. But you'd happen to get a scarf or a pair of gloves, woolen gloves, and you could exchange things like that. And, pardon me, when the bombers came over, and we used to dash off into the woods, very often the guard would stop in the bunker on the side, and we'd go off into the woods on our own. And of course, various times of the year, there was all kinds of things growing in these fields. Carrots, Indian corn, potatoes, and things like that. And with us being on our own without the guard there, we managed to pinch a lot of things that we shouldn't have done. But we finished up in one field that we could, right at the top side of the camp, of the site, and we could see down to where the bombers were dropping the stuff on the site. And we'd found a field full of lovely carrots, and we were selecting some nice loads of carrots. And we were in this field, and some German staff cars came up, and there were some really high-ranking German Air Force men, the Luftwaffe men, and they came into the same field to look down on the site where the bombing was going off. And they saw us there, and they must have thought we were working in the field as farm labourers. They didn't know we'd come off the site. And one of the officers spoke very good English, and he gave us all a cigarette apiece and said, were we fighting the Germans? We should have been all get together to fight the Russians, not us. Not English fighting
what
the Germans.
What did you think of that?
And we, of course, we more or less kid them on, agree with them, especially while they're dropping bombs a few hundred yards away. Well, a couple of miles away, I should say. But when the bombing eased off a bit, they all got in these staff cars and went away. But we had one or two different sessions of, and when we got back into camp at night, when there'd been any bombing, they used to search you to see if you'd brought any things back, but when there'd been a bombing raid during that day, they weren't so keen on searching you because they'd got enough things on the mind, and so we'd get into camp without a lot of trouble. And whatever we'd picked off the fields, we more or less kept, and that helped out a bit. But one particular instance, they bombed the German rations store. It was a big place, very close to our camp, and they dropped a bomb, or two, three bombs on there, and done quite a bit of damage, so they sent us down to do some work on this. And there was a chap, I remember, Sam Westerman. He was another Navy man. And he found boxes and boxes of raisins and currants. And they were getting all this stuff ready for the Christmas party for the Germans, not for us, that they were going to have. And these boxes had been damaged, and so every time we could lift one of these box lids up, put a load of sand in it, because it was all sandy area, and mix it all up with the raisins. And we also found a lot of little packs of bacon, and it was in so many slices of bacon in special packs for an individual. So there'd be, I should say, half a pound of bacon in somebody, and these had got blown apart and they were scattered all in amongst the bushes, and we managed to get quite a few of them, and we kept them. And we were supposed to be helping clearing all the things up, the bomb damage that had been done, but as much damage as we could do to their food stores as we could, we did. Same all the time. We never stopped trying to annoy them and do a bit of sabotage.
But you were put on duty in the ration store. Is that ration store or another ration store?
No, that's another one. This ration store was, there was Polish women in charge of it, and that was in, it was across the other side of the road from our camp, and it was used to house the Poles and all the different nationalities in different huts that lived on that side, and they had their own ration store for their own things that they required, and there was different things that they could get, the civilians, that we couldn't get. And I'd just come out of the hospital, it was hospital in the camp, and they sent me as a light duty job to work in there for a day or two.
You just had tonsillitis, hadn't you?
Yeah.
It's not been that bad, no.
And they sent me to work in there, and it was every time you could, when you were cleaning up and doing anything that you could pick up with and eat, you would do biscuits or apple or so. And the Polish women that worked there, they didn't treat us too badly. And the guard, the sergeant major from the German sergeant major from the camp, used to come out there every 2 or 3 times a day. He used to call in there to see these people that were running the store. And after he'd worked in there for 2 or 3 days, he'd send somebody that wanted the job better than you did. You weren't quite so bad. And so I got on quite well with one of these Polish women, and when the sergeant major come, she said to him, "We'd like to keep him here regular. He's a good worker, and we want him regular." And of course that put pay to the job altogether. As soon as the sergeant major saw that they wanted me to work in their store, yeah, I lost that job right away.
Now, just some more things. You mentioned parcels. Did you have much? You didn't get your parcels from home. Did the parents actually send you parcels?
Yes, they sent them. But you see, now there's a lad from Manchester named Middleton, and his parents must have been very rich, and they could send cigarette parcels as well as other things. There were some things that were limited, like you couldn't have, but he used to get parcels, I don't know how many thousands they must have sent him, but practically every time there was a delivery of parcels, he used to get one, and there'd be so many thousand fags in one of these parcels, and he had thousands of them.
Would he share them, or did he use them to...
No, he was very tight. And he had them under his bed. Of course, people used to borrow a few now and again, but he'd got that many, never seemed to worry him. And all my parcels, I think I had one, and it was a scarf and a bar of mouldy chocolate that it had been on its way that long that it had gone... The chocolates had gone mouldy, and I never did well at all in parcels.
What about letters? Did you write, or did they write to you?
You had one a month, I think it was, like a postcard effort, and an ordinary letter, but only a short letter it was, and you could write them, and you could send odd photograph home. And they could send odd photographs to you. And, of course, the Germans used to like you to send photographs out, especially of the concert party jobs. And because it was propaganda for them, you see, to show how well we were being treated.
What about the concert parties? Did you have any while you were at Blenheim?
Yes, we had a concert chap... it was his job in civilian life to run theatres and things, and he used to organise these men into gangs, and we had some men that were made up that looked quite like women when they were made up in whatever we could make them up in, and some good singers, some good comedians. And everything you'd say we got, really good, boxers, gymnasts, runners, practically everything in our camp. And when you'd got a bit of time to spare, occasionally we did get a Sunday off and we'd have a sports meeting in the camp and things like that. And... the concert parties were really good. This chap used to know, the chap that organised it, he knew everything about the stage. And I think we used to call him Pissy Potter, because he used to like a bit of jungle juice when he could get hold of it. But he was really good. And he could put a show on with the lads, and as good as anything you'd pay to go and see at a theatre in England. Really good. And one of the singers, Laurie Fishlock, he was a tenor singer. He was really good. I'm not saying as good as Pavarotti, but he was pushing him close. He was a good. Good choirs. We had a good band. Most of the men in our band were medical corps men that were in the medical corps, and they were trained during army life, even before they were taken prisoner, to play in bands as a band. And they were mostly, if it was a band, it was a medical corps band, and we had some really good players. One of my mates that I made friends with in the camp, Phillips, his name was, he used to play the saxophone and the flute, is it? No. The long...
trombone.
No, a long black flute. I think it would be a flute. But he played the saxophone as well. They had these things sent over through the Red Cross. We had a really good band. I've got photographs of that I carried all the way when the Russians started advancing from...
We'll come to that, yeah. You've still got the photos now, though?
Yes, I've still got a lot of them.
Now, you mentioned... The jungle juice, was there, did you have much of that illegal stills?
What happened in one particular case, there was a gang working on the side, and out of the Red Cross parcels there were packets of raisins and prunes. If you got raisins you didn't get prunes, you know. There were things were mixed up, but occasionally you'd got some. I wouldn't say they were spare, you could always eat them, but used to, for a special occasion, we'd make what we call jungle juice, and it was, depending who made it and what it was made of, it was pretty potent, some of it.
How did you make it? Did you ever make it? Do you know how they did it?
Yeah, it's mostly pouring boiling water on such things as, you didn't have much sugar to spare. But that was one of the things that helped. If not, you'd put treacle in it, or anything that you felt you could do without eating to make into this juice. Well, one of the gangs had been working on a site, and they'd managed to get some soup containers, because out on the job they used to bring these soup containers around, and you had this stuff to eat. And they'd be about a yard high and 18 inches in circumference, vacuum things they were, so that the soup kept warm. And they'd been working on this site well away from other people, and they managed to dig a hole in the oak that they used as a oak for having meals or whatever. And they'd laid this brew down, and it was in this hut. Well, the firm had suddenly found that they could do without them any longer, and they just shipped them away. Well, they told us where it was, because we were available for getting out, me and... I think it was New Zealand, I just forget for the minute, but anyway, we were delegated to go and try and recover this jungle juice, and so we got away from our guard, who was a ginger-haired man, who'd been on the Russian front, and he's very unstable altogether. He threatened to shoot you to drop of heart, you know, for no reason at all. He was a really unstable kind of chap. all the times he wasn't too bad, but I think it was what he'd had done to him on the Russian front. He'd suffered in some way or another. And we managed to get away, found this container that was buried below the ground and covered over with sand, and got the lid up, and we were just having a couple of sips out of the mugs. You always carried your mug round with you, and we tried it, and it weren't too bad. We think the frost might have got at it, but anyway, it to stop it fermenting, same as it would have done, but it wasn't bad, it was drinkable, and we were just dipping in for the second mugful when the ginger come through the door with his gun at the ready, saying he was going to shoot us and all sorts of things. See, when I say he was unstable, he was all right at times. Now, when he come through the door, he'd gone really off his rocker. He was going to do things to us, and so that the chap that was with me, I can't just think now who it was.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, the ginger threatened to shoot us, so the other chap, I can't think of his name.
Just Kiwi Kelso. Kelso.
Kelso.
That's what it says in the book.
But yeah, well, that'll be him, because it's a few years ago since I wrote that, so I wouldn't get his name right then. And he was a lot more cool than me, and he said to Ginger, "We'll give you some chocolates, some cigarettes. Well, we'll give him cigarettes and all things like that if he didn't want to bloody shoot us." And we finished up, he kept saying no and no, and finished up, he mentioned chocolate to him, and so he said he'd let us off, like, take us back to the work party, and if we give him some chocolate the next day. And that's what finally happened. He took us back to the work party, and then when later on in camp we gave him some chocolate and quietened him off a bit. But he was a real unstable ginger hair he'd got as well. Ginger. They always say people with ginger hair are mad, but he was a bit more than usual.
What about sport? Was there any sporting activities or football you could join in with or anything like that in the camp?
Yeah, funny thing was, we'd got a camp, a football pitch in our camp itself, and we used to go down and play whenever we'd got odd hour or two, and when you felt fit enough to go down. And funny thing was, from the main Stalag 8B, they'd got a camp there that there was a really big camp, and they'd got professional footballers. Practically each regiment had a professional footballer in it, and out of the lot they'd got a really good team, and one of them was Harold Roberts, that's in my book. He played for Chesterfield, and he was in this team, and out of all the camp, our camp, the one man had to stop by in each room, and there were people that would never get out of the bed to watch a football match. In any case, if it was in the camp, they just wouldn't get out of bed to go and watch it. But this particular instance, because they were all professionals playing and they were going to play outside the camp, down near, further away anyway, and everybody could go to the camp, and and out of all the camp, they had one man to stop in the room, And as I say, there were people there that would not cross the road to watch a football match, and yet they all wanted to go. So they drew numbers out of the hat who wished to stay behind. And of course, it was me, and I used to watch football and play football. And there's one thing I wanted to do, was watch that match, because it would be a really good match. And I got left behind in the camp. Yeah, I felt mad about that.
Did you play football at all in the camp?
Yes, I played. Yeah. I wasn't too bad, but I wasn't ever so great, you know what I mean? I wasn't professional.
And what about escape? Was there any question of escape? I mean...
Well, it's a thing that some people thought about, and I was saving odd bits of clothing, civilian clothing, and hiding it out on the site. And I'd got quite a bit. There was a chap used to come. I never found out whether he was German or what nationality he was, but we presume he was German, and we called him Stig. And he used to deliver stuff from all over Germany onto the site, and he used to come pretty regular, at least once a month, I'd say, and bring stuff, and I used to get in conversation with him, and we talked about getting away, and he said, at a particular time, like, I'll tell you when I'm ready, and you can come and I'll take you in the thing. So, in his lorry. And this particular day he come, and he said, ready, I can take you today if you're coming. So I said, right, meet you about an hour's time, and I'll go and get me stuff, because we're in army uniforms, but I'd got one or two odd bits and bobs, such as the overall trousers, like denims. And I'd hidden them under a load of fiberglass that were in one of these buildings on the site that wasn't being used, but they'd got all this fiberglass stored there, and until they actually needed it, I knew the clothing would be safe. But with the bombing coming, they'd bombed this building and they'd moved all the fiberglass away, and my bits and bobs were missing. So I went back up to him and I said, it's no good, I've got no clothing. He said, well, come on, I can take you in any case. Don't worry about it. Come with me. And I said, no, it's... Because if they'd have caught him, taking me, they'd have shot him straight away. So I wouldn't let him take the risk. And he went away. But I never met up with him again after that.
And that was your only real effort at that time?
Yeah, apart from when I was going through the park at Wilhelmshaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.